We'll call this meeting for the Comprehensive Plan Workshop to order. Today, we're discussing the last element that we haven't discussed, our opening discussion of the housing element, and we're also going to be discussing utilities element later. Just because the housing element is our last item doesn't mean it's our least important. It's a very important element, and we're looking forward to this discussion today. We would invite you to discuss any part of the comprehensive plan or anything you have on your mind to discuss, but we would ask you to try to focus on housing and utilities today to the degree that you can. With that, I'll open the floor to anyone that wished to start the public comment.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tishka Liu, and I live in Ocean View. I'm here this morning to ask you to listen very carefully to the information and the recommendations made by the Sussex Housing Alliance as you put together the comprehensive plan for the county. I've spoken to you before. I'm a member of St. Vincent de Paul in Bethany Beach, and we are seeing firsthand what families are facing trying to keep a roof over their head and food on the table. These are working moms and dads with kids that need daycare, cars because there's no other transportation available, and jobs that pay enough so they can live in decent housing. That housing and those rents are currently not available in almost all of Sussex County. Or if they are lucky enough to find a place, it is far from daycare and services and work. We have helped at least 7 families over the last 2 months with money to stay in hotels and motels because otherwise they would be sleeping in their cars. I know one young lady who works 2 jobs, takes care of a disabled brother, her own child, and she slept in her car countless nights to save enough money to find an affordable apartment that is close to her work, one that she can afford to pay for utilities and still have money to put gas in her car, make a car payment, and buy food. She's applied to over a dozen places. This neighbor is struggling because that place is currently unavailable to her. The maps that you put together for this plan need to address this housing shortage for the workforce of the county. We understand that tourism is a large part of the Sussex County economy, but if we do not address the housing needs of our workforce, we will soon be without the workers to sustain the businesses. As I mentioned, listen carefully to the needs and recommendations of this group to make this comprehensive plan an effective one. Thank you.
Thank you, Tish. Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. My name is Susan Kent, and I'm the Executive Director of Love in the Name of Christ of Middle Marva. I also sit as Chairwoman of the Sussex County Homeless Coalition that has coordinated with Sussex County Housing Group. And we have sewn in together information from both of these groups. And we wanted to make sure, as we have presented these strategies to the council, that we remember the why. And that's my job today, is to remember the why. And the why is our neighbors. And as director of Love, Inc., I have overseen 2,500 intakes of families that are vulnerable in Sussex County, of which just under 500 in 2016 have reached out experiencing some kind of homelessness. It might be literal homelessness. It might be not having housing and sharing housing with family. And that was last year. Love, Inc. oversees Code Purple, Sussex County, and we had 150 literally homeless last winter on the western side. That includes Milford, Seaford, Bridgeville, Laurel. The total number of numbers reporting to Sussex County Homeless Coalition were 399 literally homeless people in Sussex County. And I want to share with you 3 stories of what those people, who those people are, and that they are our neighbors. The first one is a lady who showed up at a Code Purple in Seaford with emphysema, severe medical conditions. She could hardly breathe, could not find housing, had a check that wasn't sufficient to afford the housing available in Sussex County. If you look at the GREAT reports that are going to be submitted, it will show the cost of housing in Sussex versus the wage, and they don't match up. We have a shortage of housing in Sussex County and a shortage of housing that is affordable. She was able to be placed in one of the permanent winter shelters for the winter and passed away from being homeless for a whole year prior to that, a month later. She succumbed to all the stresses of being homeless, and she was a native to Sussex County. Another story that I would like to share of our neighbors is a gentleman who worked for a great trucking company. He was a credit officer. He had a stroke, went to the hospital, and his wife had succumbed to prescription medication and addiction. And while he was in the hospital, wasn't paying rent, and when he came out of the hospital, he entered into Code Purple, literally homeless. There was nowhere for him to go. There was nowhere to rent. We reached out to all the local landlords, and he was homeless for an entire month. And my dear friend, Elaine, who works with me with the Sussex County Homeless Coalition and also does intensive work with the homeless, and I worked together on a case of a gentleman who was literally homeless for 2 years. Literally homeless. He was couch surfing for 20. And she's going to share with you some of the experiences it took to house him and all the collaboration that happened in Sussex County to do that.
Thank you. My name's Elaine Stepney. I'm the former director of the Community Resource Center in Rehoboth Beach. I also work with Susan at Love, Inc. And work with the Sussex County Homeless Coalition. And my voice to you today is going to be at the cost of no affordable housing. Because in Sussex County, especially in eastern Sussex County, 21% of all those residents are service industry workers who make pretty good money in the summertime, but once September 15th rolls around, their hours are either cut or their jobs are eliminated. So this gentleman that Susan's talking about had been homeless so long, and one of the costs of being homeless is losing your self-confidence, losing your trust in people. I said, hey, let's do a housing voucher application. He said, why bother? I said, well, I don't guarantee anything. Let's just try it. What else do you have to do today? It took a long, long time to find him housing because he's disabled. We couldn't find anything on the ground floor. Eventually, he did take something on a higher level and with a great pain to get up the stairs. He suffered MRSA. He'd been in the hospital 24 times in 2015 at a cost of an average of $3,000 per visit to the ER. That's according to a hospital, BB Hospital director, at a cost of Medicaid, $72,000. But yet being in housing, and even at Delaware, paying for his entire housing bill at $700 a month, that's a fraction of that hospital bill, which all ends up coming out of our same pocket. Another cost of homelessness is that families don't know where to go. After the 30 days in a motel paid for by the State Service Center, they either go into their car or they go into tents. When you're in a tent, you are subject to sexual assault, having all your belongings stolen, and having DFS come and take your children. People who live in cars for an extensive period of time suffer a host of health problems. Mainly where your legs get very swollen and your feet break open and start to bleed and you can't walk anymore. Blood clots in your legs that eventually go to your heart. But more so than that, it's the mental toll that it takes on you. When I put someone in housing who has been in a car for an extended period of time, it's overwhelming. A huge cavernous bedroom that's probably small to you and I is devastating to them. They're so used to being in a tiny, confined, cramped space. I could just go on and on all day, but at the end of the day, it is very imperative that we find affordable housing solutions for people. The waiting list for subsidized housing is between 6 months and 2 years. If you're evicted from subsidized housing, you might have to wait up to 7 years before you're able to apply again. I'm telling you, somebody 75 years old doesn't have 7 years to wait to get back into subsidized housing. And many times when they're evicted, it's because someone has exploited them and taken all their money, or because dementia is beginning to set in and they thought they paid the rent, or in one case, a lady whose husband had been dead for 4 years thought he'd been paying the rent the entire time. And what's sad about that story is the fact that the management knew that this woman had dementia. And when I called the management on it, her remark to me was, "I'm not a psychologist, I'm a businesswoman." But yet these people know that these senior citizens are suffering from the onset of age-related mental health diseases, and there's no one stepping in to do anything about it. She was put out on the street, walking down the street with her nightgown, pulling her oxygen tank down the road, walking to the community resource center. And that's sad. So a lot of times seniors have a choice. Do I eat? Do I make my medicine copay? Or do I pay my rent? And most of the time it's not paying your rent. And unfortunately, with this budget cut taking away a program that helps seniors pay for their medicines, I'm going to be seeing more of that. So I urge you to please, at least in your hearts, those people that cannot help themselves. If you're 75 years old, you can't go out and get two jobs and dig yourself out. Children and seniors and people who are disabled, those are the people that need your love and attention right now. And so I hope that you'll take into consideration what we've said today. And thank you so much for the opportunity to share it with you.
Thank you.
I just want to share on a positive note. Once our shared client did get housed, I ran into the landlord who took a risk and rented to him. She was a church partner and took a risk on someone that had been homeless for 2 years. A lot of landlords struggle with that. She loves having him. He's a great tenant. He's doing well. His health is improving. Having housing, having affordable housing in Sussex is about our neighbors, and we thank you so much for hearing the stories of all the policies, all the language. It's about the people for us, and we hope that as we sow into the language of our strategic plan, our Sussex plan, that we consider the why, and the why is our neighbors, and they matter. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies. Come on up, young lady. Good morning.
So, my name is Lillian Harrison, and I stand before you today, a representative of a coalition of various organizations. The Sussex Housing Group was formed in 98 and is a hands-on coalition of agencies committed to facilitating real and lasting change to low-income housing and communities in Sussex County. The Sussex County Homeless Coalition, of course, was formed in 2015 to address the spike in the homeless population that was unable to access emergency shelter, supportive services that would enable them to obtain housing stability. Members of both organizations are involved with CDAC, SARGE, the League of Women Voters, and other parties that have been active in the 2018 Comprehensive Plan drafting process. Members include all walks. Members include nonprofit and for-profit organizations, businesses, government agencies, and concerned citizens. And on a personal note, as a housing counselor, I assist families every day, work every day that are working to maintain housing that they can ill afford. A plight that I remember all too well as a Sussex County native and also a former homeless person that was working very diligently to provide stability for my family in a market that I could ill afford. And so now, as a housing director for Delaware Community Reinvestment Action Council, I definitely, and as the co-chair of Sussex Housing Group, it is my mission and my pleasure, absolutely, to advocate for affordable housing.
Great. Thanks, Elaine. Hi, I'm Amy Walls. I'm also a member of the Sussex Housing Group, and I'm going to walk through some suggestions that we have for the comprehensive plan. We did prepare a pretty comprehensive list that you have, and we're not going to delve into every one of those details today. You do have those in writing. So we're going to do more of a high-level presentation about what we went through and what we think are some of the really key objectives that we think would really help make a difference in the affordable housing space. So our overall goals, and these are the ones that you received in writing, are increasing the supply of affordable housing, and this rethinking the full spectrum. So we talked a little bit about shelter services as well as transitional houses, some of those emergency crisis services, but rethinking all the way through the spectrum of people who are working in the service industry and other areas in the eastern side of the county who aren't able to afford to live there. So we're thinking along the whole spectrum. Preserve existing affordable housing opportunities. You know, one of the best ways to keep people housed and to increase make sure that demand for affordable housing doesn't continue to rise is to make sure that we're able to preserve what's available today. So that's keeping people in their homes, but it's also, you know, keeping developments that are out there now affordable and available to our residents. Provide housing choices for people of modest income. I mentioned just a second ago, you know, the idea that we have a lot of people who are living on the western side of the county, commuting to the eastern side, really limited for them, you know, the opportunity to be close to public transit, close to employment centers, retail centers, and the like. Aging and substandard housing stock is an issue. You know, it's one that the county is really focused on with their home repair program, and one that, you know, helps keep people in their homes. We also think that rental property management is something that is kind of, it's been circling around with municipalities in Sussex County, the idea of rental ordinances and other things to try to track and understand where rental housing is and making sure that housing is safe and sanitary for the people that are living there. Again, it's about preservation. Emphasizing that housing, economic development, all of those things go together. You know, housing allows people the stability to succeed in school, to succeed in their jobs. It's very intertwined, and same thing related to health. And then ensure the health and stability of existing properties. And that is also, you know, related to the second topic that you have today related to utilities, you know, making sure that people have access to water, wastewater services, and the like. So increasing the supply of affordable housing, this is a balanced housing opportunity map that was prepared with the Delaware State Housing Authority's five-year needs assessment. And the things to point out, the area in yellow are the areas that are really identified as employment centers, centers that are close to public transportation, have quality schools, retail shopping centers, access to health services and the like, but there is not necessarily a correlation between that availability of services and the availability of affordable housing in those areas. So those are the areas that we're really looking to increase supply. The areas in purple are areas where there are more affordable housing opportunities, but those housing opportunities are in some cases located in areas that are already have high concentrations of poverty and high concentration of racial and ethnic minorities as well. So the placement of affordable housing in areas that are already, you know, a declining market will, you know, cause that market to continue to decline, but placing them in areas that are rising markets or stable markets won't have an impact. It's nationally recognized standard that if you place affordable housing in a good market, it's not going to impact that market and where it's going. So some of the things that we think the county could do in the comprehensive plan is define in further detail on the maps, you know, where some targeted areas are for affordable housing. And so, you know, we hear the comments at public hearings when you know, people are coming out against affordable housing, and they say, you know, people need to be near transportation, and they need to be near services, and they need to be near job centers, and we absolutely agree. The other thing that we really think is important is that affordable housing shouldn't happen in an enclave. It should not be segregated from other housing opportunities and other income areas, and so we think it's really important that we are placing housing that's affordable in areas of opportunity, and that we're avoiding some of these consistency of neighborhood pitfalls. You know, people, I agree that architecturally we should be considering, but I think from a size perspective, you know, smaller houses can go near developments of larger houses, and more modest income housing can go right next to housing that's of a higher income level. I think we all have an opportunity to work and live together. The next one is to improve the effectiveness of existing tools. So the county has been, you know, proactive in this space already. So we do have the moderately priced housing ordinance. We also have the Sussex County Rental Program. The county does make good use of CDBG resources that are available to them, as well as home funds. And the county is doing a nonprofit fee waiver program as well. So we think there's an opportunity to improve some of those programs, particularly the MPHU and the rental ordinance program, we think could be improved in a way to try to get greater utilization. So one of them is, you know, engagement and education of developers about the program. I know, you know, there has been some outreach, but we think that the continued outreach and the continued the language in the plan that shows support for these programs, I think, is really important. You know, the other idea is to improve the incentives for developers. If developers aren't using it, we need to understand why, and we need to build in opportunities for them to explore that. You know, and then there's the option of making it either mandatory or, you know, hybrid mandatory. And in that, you know, we're thinking, you know, if there is a particular area that we know that affordable housing is needed, you know, is there a way to say, you know, hey, this is an area that's slated, that has a deficit, and if you're going to develop in that area, then we really want you to do X, Y, and Z related to affordable housing. Additional opportunities would be to improve the fee waiver program to support low and moderate income home buyers, not just nonprofit buyers. The other opportunity is to use the fee waiver program for rental housing as well. We know we have a lot of subsidies, and I'll go into that next, that are coming from the federal government and other sources. And we think that, you know, by increasing the financial aspect, or, you know, the financial stack, so to speak, on those properties, we can get greater affordability and make it easier for those developments to take place. And then also broaden and increase the flexibility within the community development and housing department to administer the programs and the subsidies that are available. And we know that some of these items are, you know, more council-specific versus planning and zoning-specific, but we think that, you know, by talking about them in the plan, it really goes in the right direction. So we want to talk about, this one's really a low-hanging fruit type of opportunity. So we have a lot of great resources that are coming into the county. In this example, the Federal Home Loan Bank has donated over $3 million in the last 5 years to Sussex County affordable housing developers. They do use a scoring system for that, so they're looking for letters of support from the county saying that, you know, we support these initiatives. All of these dollars have come in for single-family home ownership opportunities. And that is bringing the cost of those homes down so that people can afford them and make them a little bit easier to purchase. Existing applicants are Diamond State Community Land Trust, Milford Housing Development Corporation, and Sussex County Habitat for Humanity. And mentioning those organizations in the plan as partners in affordable housing makes it easier for them to access those resources. And we think that that's a really simple way that the county and the comprehensive plan can help bring in additional outside resources for affordable housing. Our third opportunity is examining new types of affordable housing. And this one, we think that, I heard a little bit of a chuckle, but, you know, this is related to tiny houses. It's not just a fad. It is actually a way to give people housing choice. It is an affordable way to help people get safe, secure, and private housing that is available to them. And we think that there's an opportunity with the garage studio apartment ordinance to create some additional housing opportunities for people. So one of them is to look at the ordinance and expand it so that it's a by right provision. Right now, it's still a conditional use. And we think that there are some provisions that could be added to the ordinance that would be agreeable to the community and the council to make it a little bit easier. One of the examples that we looked at is actually in Kent County with their ECHO ordinance for elderly. And in that case, they asked for neighboring property owners to sign off that, you know, that they have been notified by their neighbor that they're going to place an accessory dwelling unit on the property and that they're supportive of it. And so that's one of the things, you know, if we think about, you know, neighborhood concerns, and it puts it in the hands of the landowner to reach out to their neighbors and say, you know, I'm going to place an accessory dwelling unit on my property. And it may be for their child, it may be for their parent, it could be for any, you know, variety of reasons. But it gives an opportunity for people who have land but don't necessarily have cash to help themselves and to help their family. So we think that there are some opportunities with that ordinance. The other one is, you know, really just getting on the forefront of this tiny house topic. I would have to say that I think it's definitely coming, and I think it's an opportunity for affordable housing, but it's also an opportunity for housing choice for people, millennials, seniors, and others who are just looking to, you know, have a different type of lifestyle than what some of us may choose. So we think that there is some opportunities there, and we think that, you know, things like land trusts, housing cooperatives, it could be a good mechanism for clusters of these types of units. And then, you know, the other thing related to the utility, again, is, you know, adding in language, making sure that the, you know, septic or wastewater or whatever system they're on is able to accommodate the additional unit and the additional usage. And we think that that, you know, is a fair and responsible thing for our environment and for the people that would be living in the housing as well. So the next one is preserving existing affordable rental housing. This also goes back to the idea that we have a lot of federal resources that are coming into our county. Currently, we have over 2,000 units of affordable rental housing that were developed using the low-income housing tax credit program. That's 44 properties. Every single one of them has a wait list. Everyone. Currently, of the 44 properties, 20 are eligible for preservation, and that preservation means that they're eligible for rehab. So the developers can go out, seek new low-income housing tax credits. They can renovate those units. And that's 838 units. And the important thing to note is that, you know, there is a compliance period with the tax credits that say that, you know, for 15 years during that compliance period, you have to keep them affordable. The state adds in some additional language trying to extend that for a period of time. But just the fact that it's a low-income housing tax credit property today doesn't mean that it has to be a low-income housing tax credit property in the future. And all of the subsidy that is coming into our county and all of the people that are being served by this, you know, it goes a long way to support these developments. There are two new proposed developments in both Millsboro and Bridgeville as well. So we think the county could take an active role in the preservation of these units. They serve people at 60% of area median income, so this isn't extremely low, but it is definitely a low income. In the low-income housing tax credit scoring process, so how you are eligible for them, the state does award points for the county recognizing which developments that they are interested in preserving. So we're suggesting putting an exhibit in the comprehensive plan that says, you know, these are our existing affordable housing developments that were developed using this program. We would like to see them preserved and rehabilitated and continue to serve people of modest income. We think that's a low-hanging fruit opportunity, but, you know, in 2014, Sussex County wasn't awarded any preservation dollars, and that's because we weren't able to score well enough, and so just a few extra points in this very competitive process really goes a long way to make sure that those units get redeveloped and continue to stay affordable.
Amy, just real quick before you go, that's a, like you said, that's a low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. Brandon, do we have that list of affordable housing developments in Sussex County somewhere? Because, I mean, if it's not a county, you know, approved project, how hard would that be to get?
We can provide it.
Okay. Yeah. I knew somebody somewhere could, just if you could.
Yeah, no, sure, I have the list. I would be happy to.
We get it to McCormick. I'm sure, yeah, just so we get it to McCormick and Taylor, because that, I agree with the other one you said and this one. If we can help people easily by adding a charter, a sentence, and a plan without really even expending any county resources, there's no reason why we shouldn't do it, it seems like. So.
Yeah, it's a very small thing from a, you know, from a plan perspective, but it can make the difference in points, and those points are incredibly competitive. And you know, we keep seeing, you know, developments that are popping up in Wilmington, and people are talking about how fantastic they are, and that's great, but let's have them here in Sussex. And if we can help our developers be more competitive with just a simple exhibit, I think we should absolutely do that. The other opportunity, as I mentioned earlier, is related to fee waivers and opportunities to you know, make it a little bit easier from a financial perspective for these developments to take place. So single-family housing preservation, you know, we know that in the last year, 143 housing rehabs took place from our nonprofit housing developers. So these are things like roofs, electrical, adding things like ramps, other safety features, flooring, windows, that sort of thing. And this is helping people stay in their homes by making sure that they continue to be up to code and are safe and sanitary for them. There are 1,341 housing rehabs that are major, that are on the wait list in Sussex County. So this is pretty significant. We do know that of the 143 housing rehabs, that we also get a lot of requests for well and septic replacements and repairs as well. The First State Community Action Agency did 15 lead abatements last year. These, again, are outside resources that are coming into the county. But as we talk about, you know, the idea of allowing the Community Development and Housing Department to have a little bit of greater flexibility in how they use the CDBG resources and others to, you know, meet these on-demand things, we think that that's critically important. So we think that, you know, the county in the plan can commit to support the rehab of existing housing stock. You're doing it now. So we think that's important to talk about again. We think that, you know, housing doesn't just exist. Affordable housing doesn't exist in a vacuum with just our nonprofits and our for-profit affordable housing developers. You know, there are landlords that are out there working on their own and trying to make units available. We have a gentleman who attends our meetings who is working in Georgetown, and he is, you know, purchasing houses on his own and trying to keep them at an affordable rent and trying not to raise those rents and really doing the best he can. And we know that there are others that are out there doing the same. But those landlords can't access a lot of the resources that are available to them because they are rental housing. And, you know, they don't want to raise the rents to do the rehabs, but they want to do them, and they're really struggling with it. So we think there's an opportunity there to really take a lead in that. You know, how do we address that? The clean water solution in Ellendale, you know, we commend the county for taking a leadership role in that. We like to see that continue and see a solution take place. The other thing the county is participating in is the work group with USDA and DENREC related to clean water solutions, which is looking at failing wastewater systems, you know, and how do we get those up to code. And we think that that's going to be really important. You know, if a wastewater system that's community owned and based gets condemned, you know, all those housing units are gone. You can't condemn a wastewater system without condemning the houses. And so, you know, if a community-based wastewater system is serving 15 units or 30 units or 50 units and it's in danger of failing, we're in danger of losing all of those homes, and the homeowners are in danger of losing all of that equity and losing, you know, that asset that they've worked so hard for. So the county is working on that now. We'd like to see them continue to take a leadership role in that space, because we think it's critically important. And then addressing the need for emergency shelter. So we know that in the last year, 190 unduplicated homeless clients use shelter services with those shelters that are using the CMIS system. But we also know that not grassroots organizations, churches, rotaries, and others that are operating affordable housing units also had a lot of usage. So 144 stays in cold weather shelters just from December to April of this year. 150 people served through the Code Purple program in Laurel, Seaford, Bridgeville, and Milford. 73 unique individuals sheltered in Georgetown, and then 37 housed in Seaford and Laurel in 90-day transitional houses. So some of the things that we think are opportunities for non-traditional housing and family types related to shelters, group homes, transitional housing, and the like. One opportunity is lowering the minimum size standards as well. You know, can we create opportunities for smaller units, are obviously going to be significantly larger than what people are dealing with today. Amending the zoning ordinance to include a more modern definition of the term family to allow for community-integrated placement of supportive housing. The other thing is co-housing, we think, is something that could really be examined. Millennial seniors, people in recovery, people of modest income, working together to support a household. The other thing that has always been a challenge is placement of shelters, and we appreciate the work that you have done recently in Belltown, but how can we flesh out a little bit more and add some specificity related to conditional use for shelters so that we can more clearly understand what the county is hoping for us to be looking for as we're trying to place shelters, but making it a little bit easier for us to meet that requirement if we know what it is, and take a little bit of the subjectivity out of it. And then the other thing is taking a leadership role in the recruitment of landlords who accept those housing vouchers. We know that there are 20 residents in Sussex County, or 20 families in Sussex County. 10 of those are coming from the Seaford School District with children that have been identified as homeless that have housing vouchers. They have been searching for homes since April. There are not landlords that are willing to accept those vouchers, or landlords that the state is able to identify that are willing to accept those vouchers. So we think that some education with existing landlords about possibilities would be a really positive thing. That's all I have today. I know it's a lot.
Yeah, question, Amy. Sure. One of the challenges with affordable housing that I know that our towns are having is that those projects take up a disproportionate amount of city services. Mm-hmm. Perhaps related to a lack of living skills as much as anything mm-hmm. else. It's often said that homelessness is not a problem, it's a symptom mm-hmm. in a lot of cases. What are the groups doing from a holistic point of view to address some of these root problems of lack of living skills?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple of things that I can, a couple of ways to respond. So one, it goes back to placement to some extent. I mean, if you look at that first map that we had there, and there were those areas that were concentrated in purple, so Seaford and Laurel, we know that they have issues related to concentrations and police protection and other services, and partially some of that is because a lot of it is very concentrated, and so Seaford has really opened their arms to the affordable housing world, and so there's a lot of placement of affordable housing in Seaford, and so you're not going to see those same sorts of issues in Lewis, where there's very little affordable housing. We have a few developments, but they're not seeing quite the demand on the services because there's not quite as many. So I think placement and really being strategic about placement, future placement is going to be important.
I think what his point was, which is mine, was is there any kind of counseling going in with people? I mean, I know, like, I used to work with a group called Interfaith Housing, mm-hmm. and they would help people get housing, but then they would also make sure they had counseling on paying their bills. And I mean, I know there's some things you can do, mm-hmm. and some that crap happens. You're 75 years old. You have a stroke. Mm-hmm. I got it. But I know that, like, what you were saying was the issue is that some just don't have skills to live in places, to keep up, to make sure they're paying their bills. Yeah. My mom has been trying to help 10 homeless people right now to find a place to live.
I understand, Kim, and I would say, and I'm going to let Lillian give her comments too, but I think, you know, one of the key things is when you have a higher concentration of people living in apartments, you're going to have more needs for services regardless of their income. And we can't assume that people who are living in affordable housing developments, you know, from a concentration perspective, are going to have, you know, more police needs than others. And, you know, when you have higher concentrations of people living together, you're going to have more calls for services. And that's just, unfortunately, you know, how it is. I know you're talking about the shelter specific, and I'll let Lillian
talk
about that.
I'm talking about basic living skills. Like, if your toilet breaks, what do you do? Mm-hmm. If you, your lawn needs to be mowed, or, you know, how to maintain just your basic living.
I'm somewhat sensitive to it, only because I feel like if we don't require that of first-time homebuyers, if we don't require that of first-time renters, it is not fair to require it of affordable renters. And some things are taking place, and I'll allow Lillian to address that. But I think, you know, certainly from the people who come in and submit public comment related to assumptions about people's ability to do certain things, we have to be really cautious about how we accept those.
So to your question, I work with several organizations, and not the least of which, of course, is DCRAC, or, well, we say we're not saying that anymore, DCRAC. And as a housing counselor, we go above and beyond with just that. Our primary services are budget and credit counseling. And the budget counseling isn't they come into the office one time and then that's all we ever see them. We literally walk with them, we stay with them, we follow up, and especially those that are engaged in our pre-purchase counseling program. So our pre-purchase counseling program, they come in, we're not fitting them for a home. The first thing we're doing is we're sitting down and we're going over their current expenses with them to see whether or not they can handle them, where they are at that point. And then we're looking at how we can move them from point A to point B. And it involves the mentality of, okay, you're spending too much on your cable bill. You don't need all those channels if you're trying to purchase a house. If you're looking at a cell phone bill, a regular cell phone plan versus a prepaid. So we're digging deep into the issues of their spending habits, and then also putting them through a HUD-certified course that goes through every aspect of home buying, home purchasing, maintaining, and sustaining that home. Everything from what do you do if the hot water heater breaks and you don't have an emergency fund set aside. We do this statewide. We are looking for partners, and we work closely with, like, WSFS here for banking the unbanked so that we can start them saving from the door before they even get into the home, understanding that they need to put aside a certain percentage of money to be able to, you know, kind of skirt or be able to take care of those emergency issues that come up that normally we're seeing, and I'm definitely seeing as a housing counselor, that have caused a lot of people to run into issues in sustaining or maintaining their homes.
Now, would you recommend that expansion of programs like that could help the homeless population or the workforce housing population with as much as, you know, yes, we need to come at problems at all sorts of angles rather than just one straightforward approach. Is that something you would recommend that we work on as well?
Absolutely, I would. That as well as under the economic development issues, just job placement and jobs coming in. And believe it or not, we as DCRAC, we partner with local organizations that provide workforce development skills. So we've already talked to employers to see what skills that they are looking for. And then we go over here, and as people are coming in, and they're coming in for housing, and we're assessing their capabilities to be able to sustain that, part of that is their employability as well, and whether or not they have the skills necessary, and then referring them to local organizations that can help supply the training that they need, and job placement. I know our organization, WGM Outreach, located in Bridgeville, our workforce development, we latched on to a Flagger certification, which is taken off statewide, simply because it's very low cost for people to get in that already can't afford a lot of money trying to get a job, but yet it's a job that once they get it, it really pays a great wage. It has the potential to pay a sustainable wage that will help them excel and move into housing better. So yeah. Absolutely.
And I know Sean Kelly is here from Leon Wiener and Associates, and they're a for-profit developer of affordable housing in the county, and they have a really excellent education foundation. And so I don't know if Sean, you want to talk a little bit about what you're doing, or
Tina wanted to talk as well. Thank you.
Are you ladies?
You gotta come up to the front.
Are you ladies done?
Good morning,
Amy. Before you start, Sean, Amy, I just want to say that this is, if not one of the best, perhaps the best presentation we've had on any element by the public.
Thank you. Yes.
It's absolutely very well prepared. I hope, Alexis, you have a copy of their strategies and goals and objectives. It follows the format in which we are trying to work from. It's obviously a lot of work went into this, and I want to thank you for the effort. Do you have a business card that you can give to Janelle or contact information? There's so much information in here that I have.
They know
it.
I have a feeling that some of the individual commissioners might want to call you individually to further explore. There's just so much information in here. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that it's definitely been a collective approach, and that's what we wanted to do, is as much as possible bring you some collective strategies that we felt like we could all agree upon, so that we weren't coming up with conflicting things that we wanted you to try to address.
Thank you so much for the effort. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Okay, young man.
Sure. Good morning. Thank you, Amy, for the introduction. My name's Sean Kelly. I work for Leon Wiener & Associates in Arbor Management. We are the largest owner of affordable rental housing here in the state of Delaware. And first, I'd like to address the comment related to services, because I think that's very important. We work with the state programs, specifically the Delaware State Housing Authority. And in many instances, they mentioned the competitiveness of securing these resources for affordable housing development. 10 years ago, there wasn't as much of a focus on supportive services as there is now. So to specifically address that comment, when we are looking to bring new affordable housing resources to the county, whether that be in a preservation deal or in a new creation deal, the Delaware State Housing Authority now mandates that we provide at least 3 specific services to each development. And that could be, we mentioned DCRAC's efforts with credit counseling, or any number of services related to the population. So I believe at the state level, we've made a lot of progress in bringing services to the affordable housing properties, and that hopefully we'll see some advances there compared to the way the policy was oriented 10 years ago, say. So my comments this morning specifically, Amy covered most of what I wanted to speak to, but specifically I'd like to see in the comprehensive plan, and this was mentioned, a focus on preservation of our existing affordable housing stock here in Sussex County. That is a priority. The Delaware State Housing Authority essentially breaks up their resources 50-50 in new housing creation and preservation of existing affordable housing. So these are assets we already have here, and in many instances they are 15, 20, 30 years old and need new improvements such as central heating and cooling and new roofs, new windows, you name it, they need modernization. And the inclusion in the comprehensive plan is critical in order to bring these resources to the properties in Sussex County. And Amy had mentioned specifically naming developers by name, but really the way it's worded in the state policy is that we need to mention the properties specifically by name. So I actually have, and Counselor, thank you for asking, I have a list of Most of the properties in Sussex County, I don't know, I don't want to say this is fully comprehensive, but I will submit that here if that's appropriate. So that's essentially my comments today. I don't have, you know, unless anyone has specific questions for me, I'm happy to talk about the balance between how we are creating new affordable housing here in the state of Delaware versus how we are doing preservation. But I think that it's very important to include in this comprehensive plan this element of affordable housing preservation and specifically identify the properties we already have here that have residents in them that are working to find new opportunities in their life. And actually, in many instances, our properties, and we have them in Del Mar, in Seaford, here in Georgetown, and in Lewis, about 80% of our properties are senior specific. And these folks, in many instances, are very constrained in their incomes, and this is just a critical resource for them, and I can't say enough about the need to include this in our comprehensive plan here. So thank you for your time. I appreciate
it. Excuse me. I just have a question that this isn't actually county. The county doesn't have a say in this, but like the rehabs you were talking about where they need new windows and heating and all that, are they eligible for SEU funding? Or
These are mostly, so specifically what I'm referring to is properties that have been financed through the low-income housing tax credit program.
Okay.
And what happens is that we mentioned the end of the affordability period. So typically the developer or owner will mandate that they stay affordable at affordable rents for 15 years, although the Delaware State Housing Authority now has policy where it's very likely that they are in the affordable housing stock for 30 years. And when we, at the end of that 15-year compliance period, typically there is, this is, you know, of real estate, just like any other real estate, there's a recapitalization. And when we put in place new resources, such as the new mortgage, and apply for new tax credits, that's when we make significant improvements to the property, whether that be windows, energy efficiency upgrades, the supportive services is a part of that program, and all of the other mandates that DSHA places on affordable rental housing here in the state.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
And I'll remind you and anyone listening here in the audience that, you know, we have a website where comments can be posted. We also, you can email directly to our staff any additional thoughts if you have afterthoughts or additional information you want to provide. So you have that avenue to continue to provide input even after we're done here today. Okay.
Thank you.
We mostly appreciate suggestions.
Absolutely. Ideas are good. Yeah, ideas are good. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
If you can, you just elbow Sean out of the way.
Excuse me, sir.
No.
Anyway, thank you. My name is Kathy Hughes, and I'm here representing Emanuel Shelter for Homelessness that's located in Rehoboth. And I'm sure you're very aware of what you kindly passed the variance for the Belltown shelter.
Actually, the Board of Adjustments did that.
They did that.
We'll take credit for it,
but it's all of a piece. It's all of a piece. And the thing is Amy did an incredible presentation, and all of the people before me. I just want to give you a little bit different slant on, or an additional slant on the picture. You mentioned, well, how do we give people skills, okay? The purpose of the Belltown purchase was to have a 24/7 emergency shelter. It was for 30, 60, 90-day period with a finite ending at 90 days. And the 30, 60, 90 was assuming, well, not assuming, but people had to meet program accomplishments and so forth in order to stay with the program. And these were issues were training and so forth to get them ready to either get a job, get the skills, or many, many, many people who are homeless work. And they may work two jobs. But it's to get them to the next step, to the housing part. So that's one part of it. there was tremendous outcry against the Belltown shelter from the neighboring developments. And I have to tell you, I was absolutely shocked at the perception of homeless people and the level of anger and really a vindictive way of approaching it. And the not in my backyard mentality. It is alive and well, okay? And in order to dispel that, one of the ways is to integrate people into society so that, you know, it's your neighbor and you have a good experience. And I want to just go, and I know you've been sitting a long time, but I just want to give you a couple of examples of what's going on in the shelter. I volunteered, started as a volunteer before the board for the whole past year in Rehoboth at the Code Purple Shelter. And we serviced 144 total clients there, okay, from December 1st through mid-April, of which this I think is very interesting because we think of mainly men being homeless, not so. 97 men and 47 women, okay? And we can't help families that goes to other areas. We don't have the resources for that. Okay, I want to tell you about what so I got to know people very, very well. I was there constantly serving meals, talking to them, and so forth. There was one guy who, he has some mental issues, okay, but nothing that would impede him from maintaining and retaining a job and very well spoken. Well put together, clean, and so forth. Well, this guy was given a job by one of the home, you know, lumberyard type of things, and they absolutely loved him. He was doing manual labor, okay? He got awards, et cetera, et cetera. But then the period, and he came to me and he says, can you find me a room somewhere? Because he knew Code Purple was going to be ended. Well, he wanted to keep his job. So anyway, keeping it short, I found him a scooter. He saved up enough money for this scooter, okay, from working. And we got him the scooter, and everything was well. We could not find him housing, okay? He ended up moving to Lincoln, which is quite far from the Lewis facility, all right? And we had horrible rains, cold, everything else. Bottom line is he had to quit his job because he was living in no electricity, just basically a shack, no electricity, no anything, no water. They would hook up to a neighboring with, you know, just one of these lines. He had to quit his job because he couldn't get to work, all right, on the scooter, in the cold, in the dark. It wasn't safe. And here was a guy that was doing phenomenally, totally homeless now. I don't even know where he is. Okay, that is a stinking shame. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I have to tell you about another couple that came in.
Ma'am, excuse me, I don't want to cut you off.
Yeah.
But we have a limited time for public comment.
I understand.
So I understand where you're going, and I empathize with it. But for the sake of time, you know, can you kind of abbreviate it, because there might be others that want to speak and we're going to run out of time.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Two more minutes, please. Okay. I appreciate what you're saying. Okay, this couple came in a cold, dark, horrible, rainy night. Highly educated husband, highly educated, had his own corporation, IT, da-da-da-da-da. He got into a very bad business deal. Bottom line is he lost all the money and his partners lost their money. They were evicted from their rental home. And, I mean, these are people like us, anyone sitting here. Total, total shock, okay? That's the kind of person. There's a perception, and this is the point I want to make, there's a perception that homeless people are drug addicts, alcoholics, criminals, etc. Well, there are some of those around, but the vast majority of people that I have met are decent people who have come upon any hard times that you and I could happen onto or have mental illness, and have just been forced out onto the road. And we need to help them, because what are we here for? I can't think of any reason I'm on this earth other than to help people, and I implore you to join in that effort. I thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, we are running close on time, but we'll continue to run over just a little bit with the board's patience. Anyone else want to speak? Yes, ma'am.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the commission. My name is Tina Showalter. I'm the executive director of Housing Alliance Delaware. Housing Alliance Delaware was created last fall with the merger of the Delaware Housing Coalition and the Homeless Planning Council of Delaware. Prior to that, I spent 27 years as a deputy attorney general. I will tell you that I am thrilled and very enthusiastic about the privilege of having this job. The Sussex Housing Group, who was here to support and led the advocacy committee, led by Amy Walls, who put together a phenomenal report, was birthed through the Delaware Housing Coalition, which was led prior to my arrival by a wonderful, phenomenal woman, Trish Kelleher, who is here today. I came onto this very late in the game, but I have learned not only through the Delaware Housing Coalition work, but also from the Homeless Planning Council, that these goals and recommendations are spot on. They are dealing with several societal and demographic realities that we are faced with in Sussex County, across the state, and across the nation. One is the graying of our population, Sussex being impacted more profusely due to it becoming a beacon for retirees and our friends in neighboring states. People outlive their funds, they don't live near their children, and the other societal reality is that the ability for a average family to afford a two-bedroom, one-bathroom home, be it a rental, individual dwelling, is wildly, the ability to afford it is wildly outpacing their income. We had put together, year after year, through the Delaware Housing Coalition, who can afford to live in Delaware. We also put together, through the Homeless Planning Council, the point in time count. Those two iconic reports are going to be merged with our public launch and be available to the public and elected officials in October. And I deeply regret those documents weren't available to this body and others, because it addresses many of the questions that you've asked. I will say Sussex County has rallied with the rest of the state to effectively end homelessness for veterans in Delaware. Last week, I was lucky enough to attend the National Alliance to End Homelessness Conference with my associate director. We had an audience with Senator Carper, with Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester, and not personally with, but with a senior advisor to Senator Coons. It's not lost on them, and they tout frequently that accomplishment for Delaware. And I can tell you, success begets success. HUD is looking to give money to programs that work. They want outcomes. If you are able to adopt many of the recommendations, I submit to you that you'll see greater success. And we, in turn, as a state, will continue to receive those blessings. We also have the keynote speaker, Secretary Carson, who also has personal relationships in this county, which will also behoove the county in the months and years to come. One thing I want to let you, one other item I wanted to address, the image of the homeless. Right now, on any given night, there are 137 people in this county who cannot find a place to put their head at night. Either they are a permanent home, that is. They're either in shelters, or they're on the streets. They're not as visible as we see upstate in the more urban areas, but they are here, be it the tent cities behind Kmart or elsewhere. I was here as a very new ED to support the effort for the Belltown shelter, and I'm very elated that your colleagues on the Adjustment Board saw fit to allow that to open. The other thing I want to address is the issue about life skills. After being a prosecutor for 27 years, I too had an image of people who are homeless, that they are intractable with regard to their substance abuse, that they are slovenly, that they don't want to work. That is not true. There is a segment of the homeless that I've learned that we call chronically homeless. And for that, there are programs, and it's called permanent supportive housing. The image of people getting out of a shelter and going to a transitional home is no longer accepted by the experts around the country. And it is an empirical fact now that housing first works. So in order for people to overcome those personal shortcomings, their personal challenges, they have to have stable housing. I think an author once said, I need some place to stand from which to make the world move. This plan helps support that portion of your population. Thereafter, it will support them in getting that permanent place to live, whether they are chronically homeless, and they will then get permanent supportive housing. either SRAP or some other type of funding that will allow them to live permanently and not come in and out of the homeless system. There is, in the point in time which you will receive in October, of the people that are homeless in our state, in this county, 30% suffer from a disabling condition, be it a traumatic brain injury, some type of physical limitation, some type of cognitive disability. Some of those people get SSI, but it is still woefully inadequate to support them in an apartment. 20, 30 years ago, it was enough. It's no longer enough. The other 19% suffer from serious mental illness that is manageable, but they will never be able to afford an independent living on their own without some kind of assistance through affordable housing, be it SRAP, voucher, or something else. The other 20% last year were coming out from being incarcerated. The good news is that dropped 40% in the prior 2 years. Department of Corrections is doing the best that they can do. I don't need to tell you what they're struggling with. They do not support people and put them out and set them up in an apartment and get them a car. So if we don't have places for these people coming out of DOC to live and in an area of opportunity where they can get a job, we know they're going to be coming back in and around and be a statistic of recidivism. So not only is this the morally and appropriately thing to do, but it's also pragmatic, it's economical, and it's in the best interest of all the people in this county. And the Housing Alliance of Delaware supports it wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Thank you. I remind everyone we have another public comment period come up, sir, at 2 o'clock. So if anyone's going to spend the day with us, and you can put your comments off till then, it would be appreciated. Yes, sir.
I was trying to avoid that.
That's okay. I understand. Yeah, I think probably we would vote with you.
I'm sure. Yeah. My name is Alan Southard, and I'm the Sussex Services Manager for Catholic Charities. And I'm brand new. So I'm learning as we go, and I want to be involved with that project, obviously. But one of the projects that we do is Casa San Francisco in Milton, a 12-bed shelter. And we serve over 100 people, 100 individuals a year, but we turn away 400. We provide over 10,000 pounds of food in Sussex County every month in 10 different locations, and yet people still go hungry. So one of the projects that we're involved with is the Homeworks project with the Seaford School District that Amy mentioned. And we have, the Sussex, or Seaford School District identifies families that are homeless or on the edge of becoming homeless. And we partner with them to try to get them both approved for the voucher system and also to help them locate housing. Out of the 20 cases that they've identified, we've been able to house four families. Because there just isn't affordable housing or landlords willing to take the risk of working with a marginal tenant. So the issue of affordable housing obviously is what gets in the way, probably more than any other single issue. Currently we have 8 people in our shelter who have been approved for either rapid rehousing or SRAP, and we can't identify a place for them to go and use that funding. So the clock is ticking. Some have been there 90 days. And we really don't want to discharge them back to the street. What's the alternative? So that's what we're up against every day. All right, thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
Just briefly, my name is Kevin Gilmore. I serve as Executive Director of Sussex County Habitat for Humanity. And as an affordable housing developer and a community organizer over the years, we've brought together over 35,000 individuals as volunteers to help over 800 people in Sussex County either build houses or improve their current housing situation. This year alone, we'll bring in about $2.5 million of investments into Sussex County from outside sources to help improve the housing inventory. And with a good comp plan, we can bring in more. All of our largest funders say, what's your alignment with your comp plan? So I implore you to take these recommendations of the Sussex Housing Group seriously, and I think you already are. As a member of the Sussex Housing Group, we wholeheartedly support the recommendations that were presented by Amy on behalf of the entire group. And I just wanted to give my support to that and ask you to look at that as well. And to your question earlier about supportive services, we've entered into a new realm this year as Habitat with supportive services, in addition to those for those who buy our houses. But we now, this year alone, we expect to provide one-on-one coaching to over 400 individuals in Sussex County about financial literacy. And that's a new area for us. Whether or not they buy a Habitat house, it's open to the entire community. We're even doing some marketing right now in the Laurel area for a renter financial literacy course that people who rent in that area could come out and learn how to improve their financial situation.
Appreciate your answer and appreciate all the comments that were made by everyone. And I just want you to know that every now and then a commissioner will ask a question that he already knows the answer to. And that's so you can put it in your own words and get it on the record here and build the foundation for us to be able to help you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. So we do encourage more support of those programs. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
It's 10:10, but we're still open for comments. I'm not going to try to cut you off too abruptly. Okay, folks, we have another public comment period at 2, so feel free to come back and revisit then, okay? Alexis, I'm going to let you march on.